The scientific society and individual bodies. The superior status which is given to rational scientific argumentation in your linguistic model indeed rules out interpretations by Goethe, Kant, Plato, and many others about any inanimate origin of human beings or crystals or atoms. But basically, that is all it refutes. However, the circumstances which you describe about the error of their ways reveals something much more dangerous than an inanimate physicality. It reveals how human beings in Western society have been capable of creating an image of the human body that literally begs the superiority of language. This image is the superior importance which is given to the biological brain as the center of identity. Within the natural sciences, it appears to be so self-evident that the superior qualities of the Homo erectus would literally be on top, which is the head. You are so confident in its correctness of this image that you state, "The present view may be formulated sharply and somewhat shockingly by the conjecture that the flawless transplantation of the brain, were it possible, would amount to the transference of the mind and of the self." But if we look a little bit further, it becomes clear that your conclusion that the brain is the center of identity and the self stem from the act that your theory would not allow for any other conclusion. The fact that you believe that the human brain and the human mind evolved in interaction with language strengthens your claim on rationality, for without this dominance of language, this claim would not exist. One might even say that the development of the cortex is the result from the development of the text. Or, as you explain, "We could say that choosing to speak and to take an interest in speech, man has chosen to evolve his brain and his mind, that language once created exerted the selection pressure under which emerged the human brain and the consciousness of self." In a way, it is painful to see in your work the possibilities of rationalism, in as far as it seems possible to take an internal organ as the cortex and turn it inside out as an external pressure. Indeed, it does make theories about the internal world quite trivial. We have now an unembodied language, a World 3 project in your view, that can impose selection criteria without a god or a human being ever having apply any power. It is a marvelous concept indeed. Whatever the power of selection of the fittest is, it has now completely submerged into a seemingly democratic society of speakers, all of them interacting and learning to be selves, refuting and hypothesizing whether they are fit or not to speak the language. On top of all this, in order to keep the chain of causality going, you make a very daring statement which would almost make all your previous statements even truer. You look upon the entire phenomena of the body and the mind as a conjectural reality between the body and the brain. As the body changes over time, it is, or seems in fact, the brain that holds the self-identity. Sort of a black box with genetic dispositions of theories, dogmas, and conjectures, which become stuffed with memories and refutations over the course of its existence. Here, you refer back to the thought experiments you introduced earlier about the perfect brain transplant, which would result in a transplant of the self, that is, thus, in ordinary circumstances, we can regard the identity of the body as a criterion of identity of the person and of the self. But our thought experiments, the transplantation, shows that the identity of the body is a criterion only as long as it entails the identity of the brain. and the brain plays this role in its turn only because we conjecture its liaison with the mind. Because we conjecture that due to this liaison, the brain is the carrier of the self identity of the person. After reading this, I kept pondering over the question, who are we? And then I realized that you mean we are the carriers of agent of a disembodied language, which is so mysteriously floating around us as an external selection mechanism, brought to life by the fact that we, at one time or another, choose to speak. Behold, no more gods, no more intuition, no more feelings or needs, in short, no more senses. Immediately, I also realized that you needed the notion of an unembodied world three objects to maintain the idea that an abstraction of scientific nature could be objective without ever having to be physically present at all. But then I came across another thought experiment which was created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle a bit before your time. And this thought experiment showed much more of society and of social expectation than your arguments revealed. Conan Doyle's experiment was called the Kindplotz experiment. Since the spirit is by its very nature invisible, we cannot see these comings and going, but we see their effect on the body of the subject, now rigid and inert, now struggling to narrate impressions which could never have come to it by a natural means. There's only one way which I can see by which the fact can be demonstrated. Thus spoke Professor Baumgarten in Arthur Conan Doyle's story of the great Kindplotz experiment. Von Baumgarten decided to mesmerize his student Fritz, as well as himself, to meet outside their bodies as pure spirits and communicate. This communication then would prove the existence of the capacity of the spirit to leave the body. Unfortunately, something went wrong during the experiment, and when Baumgarten and his student returned to their bodies, they had switched from one onto the other. This, in itself, did not bother them at first because they were unaware of the switch. It was, in fact, the outside world which created a massive confusion. Baumgarten's wife mistook her husband for a foolish young student. His daughter mistook him for a mysterious lover. Conan Doyle must have named the site of this story Kindplotz experiment as an indication for its implication. Kindplotz means no place. Indeed, without the individual body, one's own body, there is no place for a person without an absolute disruption of his social relations. Society does not permit it. Baumgarten's wife did not want a young student pretending to be her husband. Baumgarten himself was disgusted and utterly confused by the idea that his daughter mistook him for a lover. Here, the meaning of an individual body, while coinciding with its civil construction, is clear, as clear as deviation of the rule is proven unprecedented. Successful as the experiment proved to be for the two subjects involved, it holds no scientific value for the rest of the scientific community, of course. Their success in terms of trial to meet each other in spirit collapsed through the error of their mutual identities. It became a mere experience outside the frame of what physically was expected to be their proper behavior. It did not fall through the funnel of science, as it did not coincide with the concept of individual bodies. See there, the poverty of trial and error. Overwhelming as the evidence might have been in this case of Professor von Baumgarten and his student Fritz, we must conclude that the experiments has changed their life from that day on. Science does not exceed the conversation of its own society, nor of its own culture and economy. I am sure that you would not look upon Conan Doyle's example to be very convincing as a falsification of your theories. In spite of its narrated fiction goal, the kind plots experiment would not have convinced you if it ever happens. Why? Because of the nature of this type of experiment, or, as you explain... I do not intend to discuss parapsychology at any length, simply because I am not competent to do so. It seems that one can spend easily 20 years on a subject without becoming competent. This is due to the fact that the results, or the alleged results, are not reproducible, nor claim to be reproducible. Indeed, the entire crux of the matter is the fact that the results from individual body experience cannot be reproduced. Every individual life is an unique experiment. Why again make it into something like this? What is usually described as the unity of self, or the unity of conscious experience, is most likely a partial consequence of biological individuation, of the evolution of organisms with inbuilt instinct for the survival of the individual organism. Why indeed? Well, maybe because in an economical sense it seems so convincing. The individual organism performs as an entrepreneur, maximizing its capacity through language. The reproduction of its result from scientific experiments becomes the justification, which tilts the discourse across the boundaries of space and time. But the fact remains that, in order to maintain the idea of a superior argumentative function of language, it is necessary to maintain control, as well as domination over the context. It is also a very small step between control of the context, or the cortex, and control of society. Here, it does not matter so much whether society is open to refutation, but whether society remains the way it is. Conan Doyle's experiment shows that society refutes the experiences of the individual perception, rather than the other way around. Is this beneficial for science, or is it just the scientific community which benefits?